Happy Sunday, everyone. Welcome to Smartest Guy in the Room. As always, your host, Jerry Dempsey, along with Matt Smith, the famous Matt Smith.
Famous.
You're quasi-famous, aren't you?
Fame is a bitch, Jerry. It's hard to walk down the streets of Hamburg, New York without being recognized.
Are you even Buffalo famous now that you're back in town?
Depends with the crowd you're talking about.
Well, I mean, you walk down the street and people are like, yo, Smitty! Yo, what's up? Like Rocco or something.
Yeah, no, I'm not famous.
The kids chase you when you're like out jogging in the morning.
They all follow behind me, yes. It's quite something.
Yeah, but you know, you have to admit, I don't know about you, when you watch the Rocky and, you know, the gonna fly now and he's running through like the meatpacking district or whatever in Philadelphia. I mean, there's something very, you know, you're a man of words. What the feeling that he could get, like unlocking that emotion from everyone watching that same movie. Like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking fight the champ.
It's the montage, you know, the Rocky montage. And I think, well, interestingly, I think it falls in line with what we're talking about today. There's that, you know, there's that American dream element to that montage, you know, that you can just be, anyone can just be anything they want in America. And it's supposed to inspire you, you know, so.
How different is that? Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, I bought kid, especially, you know, well, we bought the American Dream when we were kids.
Right.
And just to put a finer point on it for everybody, you know, we're going to talk about home ownership as a component of this American Dream. Right. I mean, Matt and I being both Gen Xers, we hear a lot about millennials, and now we're hearing about the Gen Z kids. And what it's like for these these folks to grow up. But I mean, you know, on the internet a lot, there's a lot of good memes and storylines about Gen X and how we are the last generation to really have a good fucking childhood. Which, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I think there's good and bad in all of it.
Well, those are the memes being made by Gen Xers, you know. What's the generation after Gen Xers? Millennials?
Yeah.
I think they had good childhoods. Different childhoods, but good childhoods.
I mean, what is Gen X? It's like 65 to 80?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. 80, 81.
Right. So, I mean,
yeah, 1980, I think you're right.
The 90s, if you think someone asked me, like, what's the best like decade in the last like 50, 60 years? And I said it was the 90s. I mean, I did well and I enjoyed life quite a bit. I would say up until probably 9/11, you know, and the dot-com bubble bursting, the 90s was pretty fucking rocking. You know, wasn't the 80s, so we're thankful just for that.
Yeah, I think it was rocking for some. And my kids are millennials. They had a good childhood.
Yeah. You know? Did you have a lot of fun with them when they were little?
Oh, of course. You know, but their childhood was far different from mine. But just because it was different doesn't mean it was bad. It was, you know, they didn't have as much freedom as we did. I think a lot of that had to do with, well, in my case, I think a lot of that had to do with my wife, you know, who was, you know, the kids, like you and I could ride our bike from sun up to sundown or sundown when we were kids, and our parents wouldn't give a shit, you know, and, you know, the kids who grew up when my kids were young, they didn't live that way, but a lot of them stayed in their house, played video games with headphones on, and I would bitch at my kids, like, you know, especially my son, go play with your friends. And he'd say, like, I am. you know, even though he was in his room alone, you know, but, you know, he was. So, I mean, that was their life. That was their childhood. It doesn't mean it sucked, but, you know, the previous generation always likes to put down the present generation, you know, but I think I've touched on this before. Most millennials I know, like Gen Xers, love to talk about how millennials are lazy. And most millennials I know are fucking go-getters, you know? Yep. And so my kids and all their friends, they're all hustlers, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's just it. I just think with the internet, you know, there's never been a time where everybody just throws out every meaningless opinion. I mean,
kind of like
statement, opinions are like assholes, has never been more relevant.
thank God for meaningless opinions. We have a podcast.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. But I mean, I did when I first got the itch to cover this topic. I think what spurred me on was I read an article, and like I said, buying a home is supposedly the cornerstone of the American dream. And I'm like, what really makes Americans different from the rest of the world? Because again, you know, I always love the memes like the world is so embarrassed of America. And it's like, oh shit, I guess now I got to care about what people in other countries think about me and they don't even know me. but the idea that home ownership is an American thing is kind of farcical when you start looking at numbers. And I know you would agree with that, at least on a surface level. But I mean, in some of my research, I don't even think we're in the top 50 countries in the world in terms of percentage of the population that owns their own residence.
Yeah,
that's kind of fucked up.
That's interesting because I probably always did look at home ownership through the lens of you know, America only. And until you sent me some of that research, which you are referring to. And I was kind of shocked. Actually, I was very shocked at where America ranks in when it comes to home ownership. And it really pissed me off because I don't know what people around the globe think of Americans, but I've been a little bit sour on the way things are going here lately. So when I looked at that data that you sent me, it pissed me off.
Didn't help, huh?
Did not help. And you can get into that data, but I found it pretty surprising.
What really shocked me, I think, was because I have this argument sometimes with people, some of my more liberal friends, that, you know, since you and I were born, the population of America has effectively doubled. And, you know, from scalability, going from 150 million people to 350 million or whatever the number is now, you know, some of that stuff is just untenable when you, especially when you're adding people to the bottom of the barrel. Like, we're not importing rich people from other countries. And, you know, there are rich people coming here from other countries, for sure. But, like, you know, most of the people coming here are looking for that American dream. And, like, our forefathers who came on their potato boats or however they got here, you know, they were looking for to escape whatever hell they were in. And then maybe today it's like going from the frying pan to the proverbial fire. I don't know.
I think the American dream was real at one point, but I question whether it exists anymore. You know, and maybe,
I don't know,
maybe a lot of it has to do with what you were talking about, that, you know, as the population has doubled, it's, you know, that kind of thing is, there's certain things that are unsustainable, but I don't know. I don't think it, you know, I looked up the definition of exactly what the American dream is.
And what was it?
And it's a notion that, you know, that you can achieve the highest standard of living, which can be achieved through hard work, you know, without any barriers, thanks to the freedom America offers. And I do think at one time, especially when our fathers, because our fathers were born in like the 20s and 30s, right? You know, I think for that generation, I think that really was a possibility, you know, and, but I don't think, today's capitalism in America is the same kind of capitalism that was enjoyed by our fathers, you know, and this is not an advocacy statement, you know, this is not a pro-labor statement. It's just, I think it's factual. I think that it's no surprise, no matter where you stand on the issue of unions, I think it's not surprising that the erosion of the middle class has gone hand in hand with the erosion of private sector unions. I think that's just factual. If you look at the stats and things like that, again, you know, the day of getting a job in a manufacturing facility or a steel plant or a place like that, and then working there 40 years and being in a union and having a good standard of life that's like solidly middle class, that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, in Buffalo especially.
I mean, I'm not going to dispute any of that. But like,
the economy is different, and there's a lot of outside there's a lot of outside forces. You know, I'm not blaming that on anyone. I'm not blaming, you know, it's just there's a lot of things that there's a lot of protections that have gone away. There's a lot of outside forces that people can't control, like food prices and gas prices and, you know, companies no longer offering pensions. And you know, it's a different economy. It's a different America. And so I question whether the American dream, as at least our fathers knew it, exists anymore.
Yeah. And that's, I like where you're going with that. At the same time, we're living in a world economy, whether we want to or not. And
correct.
I think part of what you're talking about can also be folded into, you know, how do we compete on a global level, right? You mentioned labor unions, but everyone knows, you know, in a global economy, when other places can do the work because they basically pay slave wages to people. And this really is way off topic, so we got to kind of head back. But where I'm going with this is China has a high rate of home ownership. And, you know, we're always told, we've always been told since we were little babies, how kids, you know, you know, eat your food because they're starving back in China. Maybe they weren't starving and we were just being lied to, like so many other lies that get fed to us.
I think you bring up an important point, though, which plays into our topic. If, you know, if you can do the work cheaper somewhere else, doesn't that ultimately lower our standard of living and affect people's ability to own a home and things like that?
I mean, it's complicated is what it is, right? I mean, if there was like a universal or a world pay scale, got to remember, like, I mean, it's way too complicated, especially for people like you and me. I at least, like, I have a faint interest in a lot of this stuff, and I know how complicated it is, but I don't pretend to understand it or even know. In other words, how can you affect these things? But again, kind of get back to the point, Russia and China both, which shocked me because they both have large, and India. So when you think about people and scalability, China and India both have way more people in their countries than the United States. But do they have more foreigners? Like, again, you know, America is supposedly a country of immigrants, right? But I mean, they kill us in home ownership percentage. And I just wonder, what is the, like, if you're not living in America, why the fuck would you come here? I don't like if I knew what I know, which again could fill not even one row of books in a library. I don't think I'd come here. I'd go somewhere else, or I'd make it work wherever I am. Hopefully, I don't know. It just shocks me, especially like how low the home ownership percentage is. And then on top of it, we tax the fuck out of property. You know, in China, there's like no property tax.
I was shocked to see on that list. And what's the source on that?
I think one of them was NPR, but one of them is like some world calculating thing. I'd have to find it. I can send you the link.
I was shocked to see that countries like Cuba had a significantly higher home ownership.
Yeah, but you got to look at their population too. How many people live in Cuba, right?
That's true, but I mean,
not exactly a dynamic economy going on there.
And the world's leader in home ownership on the one list was Romania. I know nothing about
that. Well, you got to figure out the other. I mean, there's so many more inputs into this picture. I mean, I live on almost an acre of land in a pretty big house. So I can't fucking complain about anything, right? I mean, if everyone in China owns a shoebox, and, you know, I knew people when I lived in Hoboken, people used to make fun of me because I didn't live in Manhattan. Then I go see their shitty hovel apartment that was like 2x my rent in Hoboken. And I had a bigger apartment and definitely more luxury, if you want to call it that. But they're living in Manhattan and, you know, and they're paying $2,000 to live in like 300 square foot. So, I mean, you want to own 100% of a shithole? Like, there's so many other variables that could go into that. But still, yeah. The fact that America's the percentage is, it was like in the 64-65%. There's probably a lot of socioeconomic issues behind that too, like divorce rates. I mean, back when our parents were having their children, Matt, people didn't get divorced at a whim.
That's a really good point. Yeah, it's funny. I was born in 1967. I graduated college in 1989, and I left home in 1989, and I moved to a small town in upstate New York, and that was the first time where I really met a lot of people who were divorced. Divorce was kind of a foreign concept to me because there wasn't much of it. You're right. When we were growing up, and
it was very taboo,
families stayed together. And then I moved to this small town, and you know, a lot of the people grew up, they got married to people they went to like elementary school with. And
yeah,
you know, by the time they were 30, they were all divorced.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, you're right. That's an important variable. A lot more single parent families. Makes it very hard to own a home. And
yep. Well, the other thing that I was in my reading that jumped out at me was, there's this term I just learned this morning called generation rent. Have you heard that term yet?
No,
I don't know how new it is, but so like the younger guys today, the 20 somethings, the 30 somethings, I don't care what generation they're part of. They move like you. It goes back to what you said about like you could expect to get a job at the mill, the factory, or some kind of local manufacturing facility and spend 20, 30, maybe 40 years working there toiling at Bethlehem Steel. But kids today in their 20s, they expect to move to a bunch of different cities, work at a bunch of different companies. I mean, to be honest with you, it sounds more interesting and dynamic. I mean, if I was 20 years old today, the idea of like, maybe I'll live in San Fran for a little while. Maybe I'll live in New York. Maybe I'll go down to Texas and live in like a cool place like Austin, which is supposed to be like up and coming or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, again, like I remember being like 25 years old and everyone, yeah, I was still working in Buffalo and I had a good job. There's nothing wrong with it. It was actually fun and kind of easy and I made decent money. But the idea of living my entire existence in Buffalo, New York scared the fucking daylights out of me.
Yeah, you know? It's interesting. I think about that often because I just moved back to Buffalo after 33 years away. And, you know, I lived in a handful of different places. And none of them were glamorous or like that. But I think about that often. Like, I don't know if I could have stayed here my whole life. I don't know. I'm glad that I like lived in different places. And, you know, I don't, you know, there's a whole notion. I've talked to people before and they believe in the concept of, you know, you grow where you're planted, you know, but I don't know. It would seem like I could remember before I left home, just feeling like I needed to get the hell out of Buffalo for a while. You know, I didn't think it would be 33 years, but like, I couldn't wait to just go somewhere else, even right. though where I ended up going was kind of shitty. And I was, you know, but I was happy to leave. I needed to leave.
Yeah. So. I mean, there's something to be said for that. And, you know, the other houses are fucking money pit. You know, I can't tell you the amount of money I've dumped into my house. And it was new when I bought it. I mean, I've had it painted a bunch of times. I've had to have shit fixed, plumbing. I have to replace all the windows in my house at some point. All of them. That's going to be like $80,000. Right? And my house is not in Buffalo. This house, the house I'm living in right now, it's a nice house. It's beautiful. If I could move it into Western New York, it probably wouldn't last two winters there. Because they just don't build them, you know. Meanwhile, the house my dad built in West Seneca, you know, in 1975 is still standing like a beast.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's when I was looking at that data that you sent over, I started researching a little bit on why the home ownerships are so much higher in different countries than mm-hmm. America. And like cost was a big factor. It seemed like homes just aren't as expensive other places as they are right. here. But then, you know, what you get for your money, you're right. A lot of these homes that people own in other countries, they're a lot more inexpensive, but they're a hell of a lot smaller, you know. I mean, and a lot of them are shoeboxes, you know. And
well, and China subsidizes, they like, I don't, you know, because I've read stories about rent control and pros and cons of it here in the United States, which again, rents right now are fucking skyrocketing. And here in Raleigh, they go up monthly, you know what I mean? And it's what they're doing is just ridiculous. So I think as I get older and I pay more attention, I feel like my liberal tendencies are more just coming to the forefront, for lack of a better term. But it's like, I feel like people are getting fucked over more and more. And I didn't pay attention to it back in the day, or maybe it wasn't as prevalent. I don't know. But I mean, they're just jacking rents up all over the place around here, willy-nilly. And I'm like, if I was a 22-year-old, shit, my first apartment in Buffalo, I paid like not even $200 a month. You know, I had a roommate. But I mean, our rent wasn't even $400 a month for a pretty nice apartment.
Well, the apartment was nice, but you guys made it a shithole.
You got that right.
Yeah, it was funny because I remember your apartment, and next door was our other friend's apartment. And they were the same exact apartments.
Yep.
But you guys, your apartment was just a fucking shithole. Yeah. And our buddy's apartment next door, which was the same apartment, was super nice.
Well, because we didn't have a fish tank with a shark in it or whatever the hell he had.
You guys had nothing.
I had a Bud Light beach towel over my window. It's always a sign of excellence.
Yeah, but, you know, you bring up subsidies, too. There are, and I don't think a lot of people know about it, you know, who are just starting out, you know, because I was on Twitter the other day. There was a thread about how hard it is for young people to save enough money to buy that first house.
Yep.
But I don't know if that's necessarily true, because there are a lot of programs out there for first time home buyers. And I used one when I bought my first house. I was 32 when I bought my first house.
How many houses have you owned? I don't mean to interrupt you.
Four. I've owned four, but you know, I was in that boat back in 2000 when I was 32 years old. I still didn't have a pot to piss in, but like my wife and I reached a point where like we had two kids and we wanted to have our own home. And you know, we used a first time home buyer program. I think it was FHA. And I didn't have, you know, but the home we bought was $76,000, and I did not have to come up with a big down payment.
Yep.
And thanks to this program, and we sold it 3 years later for $125,000.
Nice.
The people paid cash for it. And, you know, and then when that happens, you're kind of on your way, because real estate is a great investment.
Yep.
But there are a lot of programs out there for first time home buyers that I don't think a lot of young people are aware of. And the other thing is, you know, you bring up immigrants. My sister was just talking about this last night. We were at a family wedding, and my sister works in mortgages for a large bank. And there's a big influx of people in Buffalo now. I don't even know if they go by this term anymore, but they're Burmese. And she was saying that even though there's a lot of programs, she said when you work with a lot of these immigrants, it's excellent, because these people are so hardworking and enthusiastic that they do everything that they're asked of, because they come to this country and they buy into this American dream concept, and they're motivated, you know? And, along that same line, she was talking to my cousin who knows all about, like, you know, the hospitality and restaurant industry. And he was talking about how, when these immigrants do come over, there's these programs where they go to work, you know, in these restaurants, and the government will pay like their, for a full year, the government will pay their salary. And so it's cheap for like these restaurant owners to have these employees on the books, because they're not paying for the salary. And then like the next year, they might pay like 25% of the salary, but the government is still paying. But ultimately, the restaurant owners will keep these people on because their work ethic is so good. And, you know, so a lot of what's happening in America too is the fault of Americans. So.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if I'm ready to assign blame or causality or correlation.
Yeah. And I shouldn't either. You're right.
But I'm just like, it's, you know, that's why it's important to at least know what's going on. And before you go, was that bad or good? You know, I always ask my kids will come to me with something, and I'm like, is it going to be good or bad? Well, I don't know, Dad. It all depends. And now, my daughter's so accustomed to it, and she's already like, they play chess, so they know she's going to outwit me at some point. So it's almost like I have to do homework before I argue with them. But I don't, you know, I hate when I make, you know, use my bias to make an assessment without really knowing if it's good or bad. Like me and you just said, oh, 65%, we're not even 50th in the world of home ownership, that it's immediately bad. But is it? You know, I started thinking, because like, okay, I've owned, like you, probably four houses. And I had some land at one point. I sold it recently. But like, when I first moved to Jersey, I had a house in California and a house in North Carolina that I was renting out, and I sold them both. And I almost bought a brownstone in Hoboken, which again would have been a good idea. But I was like, fuck this. I'm not buying any more property till I know I'm going to live somewhere. And I just had all this money sitting in the bank, and I paid my rent, and I didn't care. And the freedom of not, like, you know, if something went wrong in my apartment, I just called the people. I didn't have to do anything. something goes wrong in my house, I got to call somebody. And I got to pay usually a big, write a big check to somebody. So the freedom of that, who's to say that that's, you know what I mean, not a bad thing? Especially like, because back in the day, I'll try to connect my points and see if I can make any sense here. You know, back in the day, buying a house to most people was their nest egg. That was their investment strategy. You know what I mean? They saved all this money. They bought a house. And then when they paid it off, that was like their happiest day of their life. Like, I own this house. And then they can live in it forever. And it's like, it was, you know, that was their investment nest egg. Whereas today, I mean, there's a lot more investment vehicles. There's a lot, you know, obviously it's challenging and has its own risks. But the financial system and investing in, like, the stock market, more people can do it today than ever before. And they are participating. Again, is it good? Is it bad? I'm not here to tell you one way or the other. It's good for some, and some people fuck it up or get fucked, right? Go ahead. I mean, it's changing. So I don't know that I'm comfortable saying what's good and what's bad. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, this not only has the standard of living increased, people's standards have increased too. You know, like some of the homes, I look at some of the homes in the neighborhoods we grow up in, and, you know, I think about how our parents and our friends' parents lived in those houses their whole life.
Yep.
And, you know, to look at them, they're not much, you know, they're really kind of ugly in a way. And a lot of young people just, that's not what they want. That's like, they want their first house to be a McMansion, you know? And, you know, they're not willing to buy that starter home, which might be another reason why a lot of young people aren't buying homes right now. But, you know, the funny thing is, though, having just moved back to Buffalo, the real estate here has exploded. And like some of the homes 5, 6, 7 years ago downtown, in neighborhoods downtown that were selling for like $250,000. When I came back to Buffalo, they were all on the market for like $600,000. You know, so
you know, and again, like this Japanese company, there was in a big article in the paper. I think you may have even read it or told me about it. I don't know, but some Japanese financial company was buying starter homes and like single family, like, I'm talking houses that were in the 200,000 to 400,000 to 500,000 range and then renting them out. You know, so like, remember when flipping, I think that was a big part of one of our financial crises, all these people with their like getting super leveraged, trying to flip houses. I mean, I had a buddy who was doing it and they wouldn't even fix them up. They'd buy them, hold on to them for a few months and then just sell them and try to make like $100,000 on the uptick. And I hate that because there's no value in that. And, you know, that's like a cornerstone of our conversations usually is where's the value in doing this shit? And one of the things with the free market is, you know, prices are only going to go so high. And when people can't afford shit, guess what? The market will correct. And that's probably what we're going to see now. Like, you know, this happened in 94 in California, I think 94. There was like a big housing depression. We might see that again as interest rates go up. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, you know, it makes me concerned because when I relocated to Buffalo, I bought during it was just a seller's market. And, you know, I overpaid for my house. I didn't overpay as much as other people were overpaying at the time.
Right.
But I overpaid for it. And, you know, I did so unwillingly, but I also knew that, okay, I'm selling a house 300 miles away, I'm going to make some of that money back up. And I did, but it makes me concerned. Like, what am I going to get for this house? Because I, you know, when it comes time to sell it, I wonder what I'm going to be able to sell it for compared to what I bought it for.
Well, I was always taught you got to figure if you're going to buy a house. And I tell this, I mean, I teach, I volunteer teach junior achievement to local grade schools and some high schools around town. And you know, buying a house, you gotta figure you gotta live in it at least 5 to 10 years. Because I mean, I overbought my house in 2007. The market crashed right after we bought. And I mean, the developer of our neighborhood actually went out of business. That's how fucked up it was here. Like the lot next door to me, I could have bought for about 20 grand at one point. Because they all went out, like all the owners went out of business, like these custom home builders. But I mean, I've been in my house now 15 years and it's gone up from the price I paid for it. Pretty like if I sold it today, I'd get a really nice return on my investment. But I got to live in it for 15 years. So who gives a shit?
Yeah. And probably my kids are probably going to be the ones who sell my house because I'll probably die in this house. It'll probably be my last house. And
I mean, at this age, I mean, my plan, if it falls the right way, is once my daughter goes to college, I want to sell my house. And like my wife and I travel around and just like live in Airbnbs, like go live some beach town somewhere and just rent a little apartment for a couple of months and then go somewhere else. Like, I don't even want to, you know what I mean? Or maybe own a condo in Florida where there's no taxes.
Yeah.
Or some shit like that. You got to have a good strategy, man.
Yeah. My daughter buys real estate. And now that I'm set up here, her and I were looking for some investment property. She has a bunch, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. You got to have a strategy.
I mean, I think, I don't know that the dream is dead as much as I'm going to bring up our favorite guy again. Like Trump, you know, ever since we were little kids, the guy was such a bullshit artist. And I think the American dream, there's a component of that that's like a circus, you know, barker or whatever. Like, are we overselling it? And again, I don't want to crap on America because it's been great for me. And I think it's a great country still. But at the same time, is the American dream a marketing term?
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up because this is one of my bullet points today. Like, you know. Whether America is the greatest country or not, I think definitely America is one of the greatest experiments, you know, because we're a relatively young country when you compare it to other countries. And you know, we are definitely, I think, if not the greatest experiments. But you know, you're right. Like one thing America is exceptional at is marketing, you know, and I do think the American dream is, you know, a marketing campaign. And but just because you say something doesn't mean it's true, you know. You take a look at America. I mean, again, not saying we suck or anything like that, just stats. We have a very high poverty rate. We have a very high infant death rate. We have a, you know, very high homeless rate. You know, it's.
Yep.
You know, so there is.
Incarceration.
We are very good at marketing. And, you know, that's really Trump's profession, is he's a marketer.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I like using him because he's such a bullshitter. But, like, I just remember. I remember like I went to New York City in the late 80s. I remember going into Trump Tower and I'm just like, this guy's just an asshole. So, I mean, I was just a dumb kid from Buffalo.
I will say I bought
Trump water.
No, this.
Sorry.
About 20 years ago at Macy's, I bought a tie and it was like, a Trump tie. And it was one of the best ties I've ever owned. I will say that.
They're made in China, weren't they? In China.
What's up with the Trump steaks?
What's that? I don't know.
He sells steaks. He did at one point. He had a line of like meat.
He just slapped his name on everything. I mean, it's like the George Foreman grill, you know? Like, he didn't make the fucking grill. He's Trump, out there like being George.
There's Trump vodka, I think. But yeah, I mean, no, it's, you're right. There's a large component to the American dream that's marketing, you know?
I actually thought well of him. When I lived in Jersey, I had to go to Atlantic City all the time for work. And I mean, like literally 10 times I had to go in 1 year. And that is the most depressing place I've ever been in my whole life. And I've been to Reno.
Go to Reno, go to Tahoe.
I used to say that every, you know, I had to go there for like Reno. The whole state of Nevada was part of my sales territory back in my California days. Every time I would drive under that stupid Reno sign, I would say that and think of you.
I love that Reno sign. Reno is like
the biggest poor man's mistake.
Vegas, right? It's a poor man's Vegas.
I mean, to be honest with you, on the north shore of Lake Tahoe, on the Nevada side, there are two casinos on either side of the road. One's called Cal Neva, that supposedly Frank Sinatra partially owned at one point in time. I spent a New Year's Eve there with my brother. There was nobody in the place, and we gambled all night and had so much fucking fun just drinking with the dealer. Because, like, again, it was just me, him, and, like, maybe three old people that had five teeth between them. And sometimes you have to embrace, you know how you walk around and take pictures of, like, baby heads like laying in the street with like a shopping cart and, you know, an old milk carton. Sure. Like that depressing part of Americana, like the rotten core. Like that's why I'd love going to like places like Reno, because you just really see like the underbelly.
Yeah, but no, I know what you're saying, and that's what like actually draws me to street photography. I like the challenge of finding the, you know, beauty in what's perceived as otherwise ugly, you know, but
the picture you have of the couch like on the side of the road.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite pictures.
Hey, I had a blast in Reno, so, you know.
I barely remember going there.
With good reason.
I remember when Luke Perry tried to beat you up at some bar and we put him in his place.
You gotta
try to cut the line.
You gotta put these celebrities in their place. The if people want to look it up, and for some reason it does not have a date on it, but the data that Jerry and I have been talking about is from worldatlas.com. That's worldatlas.com, and the story is countries with the highest home ownership rates. And you might be surprised at the countries that are on there before America. And, you know, check it out.
Yeah, I mean, the American dream, maybe it's morphing into something else, but I think it's up to us and how we raise our kids to keep it from being the American nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, you know, thankfully, you know, I'm not bragging. I'm just saying that I'm saying this because it's proof that anything's still possible. Like my kids are doing well. I'm thankful for that, you know, but they're enjoying a pretty good standard of living. They're in their, one's 28, one's 25. They're honestly, they're succeeding well ahead of what I was at that age. It's so, awesome. I mean, you could still, it's still out there to grab.
Well, as that saying goes, I guess they're standing on the shoulders of giants. Dun, dun, dun. All right, big dog. Well, I think we can put a fork in it. Milkman. There you go. Some guy still running around Watertown.
All right, brother.
Well, listen, enjoy your week, buddy.
All right, we'll you talk too. To you. Stay free. Bye.
Yep, bye.